This is the Pete and Sebastian Show with Pete Corielli and Sebastian Maniscalco.
Pete and Sebastian Show. Good one today.
Real good one. Talked to musician Andy Frasco and learned a lot about this guy. I got to appreciate the guy's honesty and candor.
Yes.
We talk about his love for mushrooms.
But especially the first 10 minutes of the interview, if you're driving with the kids, you might want to lower the volume.
We went from talking about the Lakers to his addiction to sex as a young kid, as he was 16 years old. But really, really sweet man. Really,
really sweet guy.
Really into music, and had a great time talking with him and getting to know him. And you know, again, this is new to us, these guests and whatnot.
Right.
And sometimes, as someone who's interviewing someone, when they start being raw and honest, it takes me a while to adjust to that, right?
Right, yeah.
I don't know how you felt about it, but it was refreshing and also startling.
I know. Right? Well, what happens sometimes is you forget you're doing an interview and I find myself going, I go, what is he saying? But listen, I'm glad Andy Frasco was the first musician guest we've had on the show because, I mean, this guy, not only is this guy good, literally, if you go and you listen to some of his tunes, the first four that come up are fantastic. But I think, as I was saying to him on the show, he's got better stuff coming down the line. And, like, I think this guy's going to be a monster someday. As opposed to just being successful now, he's going to be huge. That's my opinion.
Yeah, no, and he's very humble about it. He's just a humble guy. A lot to say.
Good dude.
Really, really had a good time talking to him. We hope you guys enjoy it as much as we did. Without further ado, Andy Frasco.
Great to
Good
meet
to
you.
You. How are you?
Andy Frasco in the house, baby.
Well, obviously, Pete had...
had too many. Last night, I was in the hotel room knocking back some beers, playing your tunes, man.
Are you from, like, upstate or something? You sound like you're from the East Coast.
Long Island.
Holy
Long
Island, shit. New York.
Stoughtison. Sorry, man.
I know you're excited, right? But the way you just came in, it didn't match the energy of the room.
I know. I didn't.
We were having a nice conversation about the Lakers. Know. Hey, you know, touring, is it? And then all of a sudden,
bowling in China shop. Sorry, dude.
But thanks for being here. We do appreciate it. A lot to get into. This is very casual. I don't know if you're familiar with the show, but Pete and I just started having guests on recently just to add a little flavor. We did a live show last night at the Irvine Improv, and that's why Pete, I know we got a guest, but I got to get into it with you. We went over this last night.
Right.
About when to leave. Irvine to get here in the appropriate time.
Right.
My question to you, did you have a little bit too much beers where you woke up and you were like, holy fuck, I gotta get, honest to God. Because they told me you left at 7. He's from LA.
Right.
Do you think it would take 3 hours to get from Irvine to here?
100%.
Thank you. What happened was I left my hotel room at 7 o'clock, went downstairs to check out, grabbed a quick bowl of cereal, right? Literally in the car at 7:15, and it's telling me I'm going to get to here at 9:46. I'm like, wow, that's tight. This guy, he told me to leave at 8. I knew not to do that. And then as I'm going, just bumping a bumper, and it's going up in time. So it's just ridiculous. I mean, if I would have left at like 5 to get here on time, but then I would have been sitting here for 2 hours, you know? You know, and I was listening to some tunage and preparing.
Okay, I just wanted to clear that.
Why does it take so long to get anywhere in L.A.? It's just getting worse and worse.
What I don't understand, though, is when you're on the thruway in L.A., bumping a bumper, all of a sudden, for no reason, there's like a half mile gap where we all do 65.
Yeah.
And then it stops again. How did the gap happen?
I don't know. I don't understand traffic and how it works, but they're glad to have you here. So we were talking prior to you coming in. He lives in Denver, right?
Mm-hmm. And you live in Denver now?
Yeah. It's the hottest music scene in the country.
Oh, right? Really?
It used to be Austin, right?
Used to be Austin.
Austin or Nashville?
Yeah, all the comedians moved there, and I felt like, yeah, Denver, because, like, there is no... The West Coast touring is so spread out that, like, every gig is, like, 6-7 hours. So, like, we're doing 250 shows a year now. So I felt like to fly, I'd rather have a 2-hour flight than a 4-hour flight everywhere. So it's a little more convenient, and you're out of the mountains, and mushrooms are legal there, so I could eat mushrooms every day and not...
This is the second guest we had on with the mushrooms.
Wow. A lot of his songs are about, you know, having a good time.
Is it hip now? Is mushrooms hip now?
Well, apparently a lot of people are doing this microdosing of mushrooms and, like, oh, they're, you know, experiencing a different universe or what have you. Pete and I haven't gotten into it yet. I don't think we are, but... you are flying to these gigs, or the band on a bus?
We have a bus. We have a van, a 15-passenger van, because I'm kind of cheap, and my band just sleeps. It's a Laker update.
Sorry, this guy's got Laker.
Are you serious?
This guy's got Laker.
I'm obsessed. Yeah,
did you tell
me
who our last guest was?
What was our last
Jay.
Guest? Oh, Jay Moore is marrying Jeannie Buss.
Yeah, well, they're married now, yeah.
Oh, they're married.
I'd pull out my phone, but I don't want to rub it in your face. Yeah, we got invites to the wedding.
What?
Yeah, that's how we roll around here.
Oh, man.
Wow. I begged Moore. I know Jay from the day doing stand-up, so I practically begged him. But this is a little get-together to have. We're not going, but can I ask a quick question?
I think I might go. But
you might go?
Yeah,
okay.
I might go, yeah.
All right. Do you think being a Laker fan, and Jay denies this, do you think, and he's a big Laker fan too, if he tells Jeannie, his wife now, like, so-and-so on the team, like, why do we keep starting that guy or something? Like, you think she might take what he says and bring it back to the coaching staff? Or do you think being married to the principal owner of the Lakers, he has no, you know, say in?
I don't know. Do you tell your jokes to your wives? Like, do they give you?
I do.
And they're like, "Oh,
do you,
funny.
Do you sing a song for the? Are you married?
Or I've never had a girlfriend before.
You've never had a girlfriend before.
Bro,
what are we even doing right now? I can't even work with this.
I had one girlfriend, and it was just recently, and I basically learned what not to do in a relationship. And I think giving them, going back to Jay and Jeannie, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like a conflict of interest, right? Especially with a billion-dollar business.
So what, you know? Like, you're such a road dog that, like, when you make love to a woman, as you're making love to her, you tell her, I'm going to be gone in the morning. Just know that, right? Like, is that your deal? Like, he's a road guy, man.
Yeah, listen.
Living on the bus, writing songs, smoking weed from state to state, bitch.
I don't know.
Listen, bro, I don't even know where to take you.
All right.
Let's get to the girlfriend thing.
Okay. Yeah.
To piggyback off of Pete, are you just one of these, like, musician that you're so, like, into the music? You're like, nah, I can't be bothered with the, because I'm into the writing the songs and the albums. Is that where you are? Like, how old are you?
I'm 35.
Okay, so 35. Well, you know, 35.
And you're more of a keyboardist, right?
I'm a piano player, but I've been doing 250 shows a year since I was 19.
My God. So your piano's your wife.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wow. Well, I was like a sex addict when I was 16.
Oh, wow, Jesus Christ.
Bro, that's the L.A. upbringing. Get out of here, guys.
Yeah.
Get out of here, I'm telling you. Anthony Kiedis is like, no, same thing. These two.
Yeah, I was pretty bad. I didn't get into drugs. I was like, I loved sports and I loved sex. Like, I had sex with my teacher when I was like a senior in high school, and I got caught, and it taught me a valuable lesson that I was like going to be on like the Maury show and stuff. And
oh, wow.
And my dad gave me the best advice. He said, just lie about everything and don't get caught up in this. I was 18, so it wasn't rape, but there's...
Man, listen, I know this is new to us with guests and shit, right? But the honesty is just... It's just unbelievable.
I know.
To a point
where, you know, pack some of that away. You don't need to hear all that shit. Trying to have a good time. You're on the fucking side of the highway trying to bang to anyone she pulls over. At 16, right? That's his lie.
The lie. He's sleeping with teachers. He's a sex addict. We're 11 minutes in.
I know.
Where's this going?
He goes, it wasn't really rape. In my head, I'm like, I wasn't even thinking rape. That wasn't even in my head. Was that in your head? He goes, I got caught. No, the social studies teacher got caught. You had a good story. Shit.
Oh,
I've always been honest. I don't know.
No, I'm not. I'm not knocking it. It's just like sitting on the other side of the table. We went from LeBron to having sex at 16. I mean, I don't know.
How do you even know it as a spark with your math teacher?
I don't
know. Like, would you even, have you ever had a class where you're like, I think I could make out with my social studies teacher?
I did. I did when I was in third grade. I had a crush on my teacher, and during story time, she would take off her shoe. And she had a nylon, and I would rub her feet.
What?
While she read a book. It's innocent.
I don't see a problem with that.
That's as far as it went.
Reverse pedophilia. Oh my God.
You're just staring at her while she's in the sun.
She needed therapy after that. Oh, she kept telling her husband, every time I took my shoe off, this Italian kid would come fucking sliding over. Start rubbing my bunion.
Oh, God. But to your point, how does a relationship like that start? I mean, do you stay after to get help one day and next thing you know? I mean, like, do you come on to her? What's the...
I was like, I kind of growing up in LA, you like grew up way fast. Like when a lot of my friends, we all had jobs working at the porn house. So we'd be the security guards at these like houses up in like Sherman Oaks, like, you know, up in like near like, what is it now? Like Haskell up in those hills and like Canoga Park. And I grew up in the Valley. So it was like before the condom rule, it was all, that was the jobs you got as a high school kid was just being a security guard at a porn house and
no mowing the lawn.
Nothing at McDonald's.
No.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
So did your dad
know you were doing this?
My dad didn't know because I was in a band and my first managers were these like porn managers. Oh. And I'm just trying to find a manager I used to like represent myself and book all my bands and I worked at a record label and stuff and no one was taking me seriously because I was 16, 17 years old. So I got a manager and I got the wrong manager. I got this porn manager who doesn't know anything about music, but I was like, it was a summer gig. We weren't on tour. And he's like, I got this gig if you want. You could just like live at this like really nice house and just make sure no one steals anything from this house. I'm like, all right, cool. And then I realized it was like a brothel porn house. And it was fun for a second. Then it's like you bring your parents over and stuff. You're like, mom, don't sit there. There was just like a bukkake scene or something. Like,
let me ask you. And again, I'm relating it to me growing up in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, and my parents kind of knew exactly what I was doing. Now, in your family, was there just kind of like a lax, like it sounds like it's, to be honest, it sounds like there's really no parent.
I don't want to age myself, but I'm thinking the same thing. There's no adult supervision in this kid's life. I mean,
Who at 16 has their parents over for lunch, right? My mom is still making my lunch. Yeah. And you're going, oh, you know, when your parents come over, you're like, don't sit there. At 16.
Yeah, I don't know. My sisters were old, like 8 years older than me. So, and my parents were a little older. So I feel like, yeah, I kind of like raised myself in a way and just, right. I was kind of a loner. I was always like managing and booking bands. Even when I was like 13, I was like reading books like Guerrilla Marketing and All You Need to Know About the Music Business. Like I was obsessed with the music business. Wow. And they're like, he's fine. Like I was booking shows at the local bar, Cobalt Cafe in Canoga Park. And then they moved me to the Roxy and I was working at Capitol really young. So I was like, I was just like faking my age. I was like, I've been the same height since I was like 13.
So do you start playing piano at a young age? Does your parents get you into this or does someone just give you a keyboard? Next thing you know, you're in it.
Yeah, my mom, I always had a piano at my house. My parents were like, just do whatever you want. Be supportive. My sisters were doctors and stuff, so they just wanted me to have good grades. So I was like, I didn't start playing music until I was 18, but I was managing bands and booking bands and stuff. So I learned the industry the opposite way.
Okay.
And then my mom let me go on my first tour when I was 16 with this like metal band. And it changed my life. Like I fell in love with the road. Like how old were you guys when you were touring and stuff? Started touring.
Well, I mean, I started doing comedy at 24, but I didn't really start touring until I was 31. Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. I wish I knew that. City and then,
I wish I did it that way.
Well, I mean, I don't think it matters how you get into it as long as, I mean, the fact that you learn the business prior to you going on tour and being a musician has to, you know, be a bonus just because you're not so naive of like, oh, how does it work or what do you do? Mm-hmm.
It was totally.
A lot of your music too, I notice, and again, I'm just starting to do a deeper dive, but Change of Pace, another great one. I'll introduce you to some of the stuff. It's really good. It's got this road vibe to it. It's like, your songs are like party-esque, you know what I mean? Even the ones that start slow, like kind of get going. And it kind of has this feel of like, because when you're on the road, you want to have a good time, right? Whereas, do you ever see yourself more like someday as a real, more of one of these musicians that just, we make the album, we cut it till we get it just right, we put it out, and like less touring, but more succinct touring. Like, we're going to go out for 2 months, tear it up, and then get back in the studio. But because you guys are a road band, man. You know, you're like the Grateful Dead, always out there doing your thing. I see you guys... He's playing everywhere. He's in freaking Germany doing a show and here and there. By the way, I want to get into. Plays barefoot.
I know. It's not your vibe. Huh?
It's not anybody's vibe, bro. You'd have twice as many fans if you keep your shoes on. Especially when you put your foot up on the speaker and you do a number up front to the crowd. God. He puts it out there like, hey.
You'd be surprised, though, how many freaks love feet. Really? Like, I'm on this page called Wiki
His
Feet.
His math teacher will vouch for that, huh?
Some fans have put all my feet pics on this one page. There's 1,700 feet pics of mine on, like, this. It's called like Wiki Feet, and I'm like number 4 in the country.
Your feet.
Just
are
like
number
I have,
four.
Like look, I have such gross feet.
Oh,
like,
bro, I didn't even. I thought he was barefoot.
Is he?
No, he's not. He's got a shoe on.
My God, I have to burn the coffee. Oh my God! Holy shit! No, thank God I had breakfast 2 hours ago. Jesus!
Why do people love? Why? Why do people
you do that? What do you feel like? Are you more one with the earth when you're singing? When your foot's touching, like
I just think I'm dehydrated and my feet just sweat so much from all.
It's absurd to you to have a shoe on.
Like the beginning years, I was doing a shit ton of cocaine. And I would just be like...
I always go to that, bro. Every time we try to have a moment, it's gotta go to this.
Talking about his feet. He's like, no, I was doing lines. Man, lines. Trying to find out where there's no socks in your drawer.
I thought maybe you're going to be like, oh, I got a little sweaty. Was this before or after you were banging your mouth? All right. So anyway.
All right.
So you used to do a lot of coke and get dehydrated, and then it became a thing. Like, do you ever perform with shoes on?
No. Never since those moments where it was like I was just feeling really anxious in those beginning years. I felt like I got comfortable with just like not having shoes. But then you... In the beginning years, these venues were so gross and so dirty that it's like I'd get to the hotel room and it looks like I was like patient zero of like this, like it was gross. And like we couldn't shower that much. So it was just like we were just sleeping at like the bartender's houses and like sleeping on the floor. It was just, I mean, it taught me about, you know, cleanliness, I guess, but it took a minute.
Yeah.
Because I'm from Calabasas where everyone's kind of like ritzy. Area and I knew I wasn't one of them when I showed them my feet. You know?
Well, you bring up a good point because the bottom of the foot, in my opinion, when you shower is typically neglected.
Yeah, right? It is.
And a lot of people think the foot just gets clean because it's in water. I have a separate brush in the shower for my feet, all right? Wow. Now, do you ever take your foot up and scrub the bottom of your feet based on the fact that you're walking around barefoot all the time? Is the bottom of your feet cleaned?
It's
with a brush or a rag during the night?
Well, I haven't lied to you since now, so I would say no.
No.
I'm not going to lie to you now, Sebastian.
All right. At least he's honest.
At this point, the bottom of his foot is as tough as a sneaker thread. You know what I mean? Right?
It's like a
it's
sole.
Just calloused with just like 10 years of dirt. Oh, Jesus. Man, you would hate torn. I just realized that.
Why?
This might be the last time I see Sebastian ever in my life.
It's good. It's nice to see another side of life. You know what I'm saying?
You got a special brush.
I got real a foot. Yeah, to scrub the feet down.
And the only time you're barefoot is in your own home, as it is.
Yeah. I got to keep the bottom of my feet clean.
Are you like a super clean?
Well, I just like to be, you know, showered, clean, presentable. I mean, that's just kind of the way I grew up. I always had to wear... Listen, I don't mean to brag here on the podcast, but I did win. Actually, I was tied for best dressed in high school.
Really?
And I think I should have beat the guy I was tied with. I think it was political in the sense that he was on student council. Oh, I was rogue. I was like one of these kids that wasn't really piped into the high school scene.
Yeah.
I had my own thing going out, you know, dance clubs and what have you. And I just, it couldn't be denied that that I was one of the best dressed kids in the school.
Yeah. It sounds like, if you had any connections, you would have like literally walked away with it.
Yeah. Landslide. So you're torn barefoot, right? What I want to know, because comedians, we know that a bit is good based on the reaction that we get from the crowd, right? Mm-hmm. When you make a song, right, in your head, do you know, it's a hit? Or are you ever surprised that a song does well and you're like, wow, that took off? Do you have an innate ability to figure out what's good, what's not?
Sometimes, like when I'm like working out the song during the shows, and like when I first, like every, you know, the narcissist in me is like, yeah, this song's great. And then you take it out live and no one understands what the fuck's going on. So I feel like sometimes I'm getting better at understanding it, but it's like, you never know what people want in intimacy, you know. Songs to me are super intimate. Like, I used to write songs like Blame It on the Pussy and Smoking Dope and Rock and Roll that weren't as intimate.
Smoking Dope and Rock and Roll.
But now I'm writing songs like, you know, I scored Gary Goldman's Great Depression, Judd Apatow's doc, and there's a song called Some Days where, you know, it talks about mental health and stuff, and that's what I'm trying to approach now is show people, like, artists are fucked up and we've run away from our feelings by going to the road and stuff. And I want people to know that there's a different side of artistry than, you know, just being happy and crowd surfing and chugging Jameson on stage and being barefoot and and hitting people in the face with a dirty foot while I'm crowd surfing and stuff. Like, you would fucking hate our show, Sebastian. I just have a feeling if you're going to come to the show, you're going to be back. Because
he would enjoy your show from a skybox. Yeah, you would enjoy the show.
No. I don't know what to do at concerts. I really don't. I just want to go see Beyonce, and I just, like, everybody seems to be having a good time, and I'm looking at the you know, like, we're standing up, and I gotta stand up, and I'm wondering when we could sit down. I never really participated in live entertainment in the way it should be enjoyed. I've always been, like, kind of like you said, off to the side. Yeah. I wouldn't be the guy holding you, crowd surfing. I don't know, maybe I would enjoy it. I just haven't really got into
that. What about, like, when you were a kid?
No, I didn't go to concerts. I went to a Michael Jackson concert, and that was basically the only, like, Lollapalooza was in Chicago. Never went to that. Any of these festivals, I'm not a big, I just don't like a lot of crowds.
Yeah. Were you a hermit? Were you both hermits or what?
No, obviously this is good. Like, when you were talking last night about, like, when you're in the green room and they ask you, do you need anything, Pete? And you're like, company, right? Like, he was looking for people to talk to backstage,
right?
And I was waiting for the MC to get the fuck out of the room. last night.
You won my company, so
but, like, the more people in the room, I gotta leave,
right? You know what
I'm saying, like, I have to walk away. But no, I'm just, that's the way I'm not a loner. I like people, but I'm just a little bit, I'm like a hard shell to crack.
And I feel like comedians, like, that's perfect gig for you, because you're normally alone at these things, right? You got like, in the beginning, you have the band apartment, or not the band apartment, the comedian apartment. You don't really have to, like, talk to anyone. Like, I'm stuck with fucking seven psychopaths in a coffee can van.
Like, you got guys playing brass, right? Like, trumpet and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so if they act up in the van, are you like, God, you're the trumpet, right? I don't even know how much I need the fucking trumpet right now, right? Like, you got one song where a guy comes in on the violin or something. Like, when money gets tight, you're like, you know who's going, all right? They don't even hear that violin until they hear the song the fourth time before they even hear that, right? So,
oh, man.
So you say you have seven guys, but let's be honest, Andy, you could have three. You're not Chicago. You're not Chicago, all right? What the fuck?
There's a lot of brass here.
Now, to Sebastian's question, though, to get on that one, though, you have the one song that we all love, Dancing Around My Grave, right?
Yeah.
When you wrote that, there had to be a part of you be like, well, even if it's not your favorite, because it's a little more mainstream, maybe, you had to be like, they don't love this.
That was the first song that was like, okay, like, I don't know, like, do you guys think about death a lot?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we talk about it.
Constantly, like, me too. And, like, as I get older and realize how, you know, how short life is, I'm like, shit, like, I realized I didn't have a will, so I wanted, and I couldn't afford a will at the moment, so I was like, I might as well write a song with all my demands on it. Like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. Death is weird. It's like, what do we're supposed to, like, do everything we can, but if we do everything we can, we're going to get burnt out and then we die quicker. So it's like, it's kind of like this balancing act of following every path you have, but also, like, staying alive so you could see the other side of life. You know, I never thought of, like, the family side until recently, you know?
Is that something that you want to go ahead and do, or do you think that interferes with touring? I mean, do you love touring so much where maybe the girlfriend, the kids might get in the way of that, or are you entering another chapter of your life where you're like, listen, there's more to life than 250 shows a year?
Yeah, right now I'm
great question, bro. I feel like a Rolling Stone interview over here. That was beautiful.
I'm telling you. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't, I think so.
I don't know any other show that critiques the questions as they happen, right?
We'll compliment each other. What a question.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. You go back and watch the show and go, hey, no, the question that you asked about the thing, that was a really good question. Yeah. Not like during the answer.
But I'm sensing, I know where he's going with this too. I can sense it by his last answer. He wants the family.
Well, is that, again, is that something that...
I don't know. Like,
you're a teddy bear guy. You want to be a dad, I can sense it.
I do want to have love in my life, but I also don't want them, like, up my fucking ass about just being on the road so much. Like, how long you been with your wives?
15 years, and what do you be, 20?
Yeah, she's old, married over 20. She's been with me since the first joke, so yeah, that helps, because she got it from the beginning, you know? But what about marrying someone who comes on the road with you, and you homeschool your kids on the road, and you live this hippie, beatnik, you know, we do the road thing, you know? I mean, it's doable. I mean,
fuck no. I mean, that's my prison, I feel like. I go on the road to, like, run away from my life.
Can you imagine finishing your last song and knowing as you're finishing, I'm literally going to get in bed right now and watch a movie with my wife?
Yeah.
That would ruin the show, right? Wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe not anymore. I'm old now. So, like, I don't know. Like, I've always, like, it's like, I always have this existential crisis. Like, is rock and roll dead? Are there still Zeppelins in the world? Are there still people who are like, you know, like, you hear all these crazy stories of Zeppelin. You hear all these crazy stories about ZZ Top, you know, like Ozzy Osbourne, like, eating a bat. Like, that shit doesn't happen in the music industry anymore. Yeah. Like,
why?
I don't know. I think because of social media, like, oh, dude, this guy's insane. You just saw him eat a fucking bat. Like, I see it in person. Not like a story. Like, dude, Ozzy was crazy last night, did a bag of coke and started eating bats. Like, I think it's more digestible if it feels like it could be a fairy tale. Just like, oh, this dude is just passed out on the floor, you know, like, with dirty feet. And
you get more hits now if as a rock guy, if you got up at 6 o'clock and jogged and people jogged with you. Right? We're all going. Seriously, that's rock and roll now. Yeah. Guy gets up at 6 a.m. and jogs with the town.
I think I need to do that. I'd probably be more successful.
People barefoot.
So you're in the van with 7 guys. Is there a lot of being part of that group? Is there a lot of, I don't want to say complaining, but is there a lot of friction within the band just because you guys are such in close quarters?
Yeah.
Creatively, is there differences when you're on the road? Is there a guy that keeps you guys all together? It's like, is there a manager with you, or is it just?
I have a tour manager. He's basically just wrangling cats at this moment of its life. I wake up early, like, because I do my podcast. I do all the budgeting for the band still. I do a lot of the business side and whatnot. So, like, I have to be up at 8 a.m. regardless if I stay up till 4 a.m. at the after parties. Those guys could just sleep all day. So, like, I get pissed off that they're sleeping all day while I'm, like, sweating, trying to figure out how we're going to, keep this band alive for another 100 show. Like, we're about to start our 100 date tour on Thursday.
Where do you start it?
We're starting in Cleveland, House of Blues, and we do 5 shows a week, take 2 days off, but those 2 days off we drive 20 hours. So it's like, we already just did 26 festivals this summer, and we did 3 festivals a weekend, and like, just been the biggest year of our lives. And now I'm telling the guys who are all haggard from the summer, like, okay guys, we're going on tour for 100 days, let's try not to kill each other, you know? It's like,
you're the responsible one.
Like, I just do mushrooms every day. That's like my
every day,
5 days a week.
You want them right now?
No, I was gonna ask if you guys wanted to do them together, but you know, I've already fucked up with the dirty feet.
No, bro. No. Let's just keep the mushrooms. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. I have a family.
You see Sebastian just tripping dick. trying to make eggs for the kids and shit.
So
we're going to go hiking with you too a little bit?
I thought this was going to be a whole day event. That's awesome, bro.
Yeah. So let me just, like, we hit the mushroom. This is the second time it's come up. So the mushrooms 5 days a week, would we know you were on a mushroom bender if you did them, or?
No, not now. But I don't think so. Because it's more of me being present. Like, I'm addicted to my phone. I'm doing all the social media. I'm doing everything. So it's mostly for me to, like, kind of stay present and have conversation more than just like getting fucked up on them.
Oh, so it's not like you're walking around and you're seeing like, oh, wait a minute, bro. There's a dragon in the sky. There's none of that.
I feel like I'm dreaming. I'm talking to you guys on a fucking podcast. I feel like I'm tripping right now.
This is his mushrooms.
Now, considering you do them so often, do you like class it up a little? Like, do you like put them in tea or coffee, or do you just like, you know,
no,
munch
they,
them like a?
My fans know I love mushrooms, so they just throw drugs up on stage, and I eat them from.
Yeah.
See, that's what I'm worried about too. Is like.
Hold on. Wait a minute.
Don't worry about that. I take whenever someone gives me a joint, like the other day someone shook my hand, I go, I have some for you. It's not drugs. And I'm like, oh, that's okay. But in my head, I'm like, then beat it. I don't want, what do you got? The fuck? Well, what are you going to give me, a fucking, you know?
Note. Well, I don't even eat like cookies people make me. I said, well, throw it out.
Cookies, but I'd smoke a doobie.
Yeah, but you don't know what it's laced with. Right?
Yeah.
Is there any filter that goes, oh, that mushroom might screw me up some way?
Now I think about that a lot. Like, I got roofied once. Like, some, you know, like, I used to just take
what?
It, like, when I was a kid, not a kid, but like, you know, 7 years ago in my career, it was like people would like bring in nitrous tanks on stage and like bring Molly, and I'd just be in the crowd just eating everyone's drugs. And I had one bad trip hour. I was in Germany and I didn't realize it was meth, and I was up for three days straight, and like, just like, and like my head was like, what the fuck do I do? I'm like, I'm in Germany. I'm in this like weird, sketchy part of Germany. And I'm like, I was, you know, addicted to sex when I was a kid. So like, I felt like the only thing I could do to like go to bed was to like beat off and sleep. And
were you banned and stuff?
This is a family show. And you were coming in with like a serious question after. So we were beating off. How long did it take you to go to sleep? What the fuck are you?
Yeah, who thinks they, you know, when they're high, they think, oh, how can I get on high? I'll jerk off. That's like...
I feel like I'm about to get kicked out of this house right now.
All right.
Okay, so
is really like, I think,
no,
like,
we'll
Sam
have a
Kennison,
nice time with you, man.
Like, yeah. Is this like, it's like the rock and roll? It's like comedians. I have this vision of comedians that they're, it's like just as rock and roll as rock and roll. Is that, am I wrong about that?
I don't think so. At least, I mean, for us, I don't think we're like rock and roll.
No.
I mean, obviously. I mean, yeah. Just, I mean, come on, bro. I'm wearing a pistachio colored shirt.
Yeah. I do think though that there's like 95% of the time when me and you are hanging out, 95% of the time we're laughing. Fucking laughing. So there is this like, so sometimes you would think, oh, you guys probably laugh when you get together. We do. But this like this one side of comedy that I think it was why you gravitate to certain people that you're friends with. Like, I'm dirty. I drop F-bombs left and right. But I don't do like, you know, fucking banging, you know, like that kind of dirty.
And no,
you know, or we don't like take our shirts or dance naked or crazy shit. Like there's like a... class.
Yeah.
That, it's a steal from you. There's a class to it all. But you're rock and roll. You're allowed to get away with all that, man. It's a different thing.
But
different.
I don't think I am anymore. You know, it's like you could talk about it and stuff, but maybe it's like, I don't know. It's like the same thing was like maybe like people like coming into the green room and like, hey, I got a great joke for you. And you're like, I don't want to hear that fucking joke.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like the same thing in music. Like people show up like, hear my demo. Uh-huh. I'm like, tripping or something. I'm like, I'm listening to a fucking phone, like an iPhone, like demo.
I was actually meaning to ask you, what did you exactly think of my demo? Like, did you get it?
Oh, no, I was gonna listen to that, but then I just carried on living my life.
But you want to be nice, but I feel like, oh, it's the same shit. Like, it's just different parallels, I guess. Like, that's why I fell in love with music, was like, I could be myself and feel like I'm not being judged or whatever. So
gotcha. So do you feel like your lifestyle on the road is similar to other bands that are out there? Like when you share stories, like similarly to Pete and I, I'll go, oh, yeah, like last night I did a show, and then afterwards I watched a docuseries on Netflix. And he's like, oh, did you see that? I saw that. Do you compare road stories with other people and go, oh, wow, like we're doing it really different than the rest of the music industry, or does this seem to be the norm? Like, is anybody else?
Thinks we're psychopaths. Everyone's like, this is why we can't open for huge headline tours, because they think we're just going to make them all drug addicts and stuff.
Gotcha.
I'm like,
gotcha.
Yeah, we kind of fucked up there. But we have our couple, you know, like Tenacious D, you know, Kyle Gass, they're our homies. Like, we're taking Kyle on tour with us and stuff. And like, we opened for Tenacious D last week. And like, I could do mushrooms with him and talk about rock and roll and stuff. But like, a lot of the newer bands are like, you know, Boston College. Yeah. Music grads and like Juilliard and stuff, and we didn't go to college, and we learned from playing at every bar in America. So it's like,
yeah, that's awesome though, man. You get to respect to the other musicians that way. I feel,
and it's however way you get there. We all end up in the middle anyway. But they don't fuck with me. Like, they don't, when they bring their kids to the show, they're like pulling the kid over, just like, no, don't hang out with Uncle Andy. You know, this guy's fucking insane.
You know? I may have told you this once, but like one time, like Bonnaroo, they had a comedy tent, right? So I remember playing there one time. I'm sure you've played Bonnaroo. I know you did. You're a big hit there, Bonnaroo.
Yeah.
So the one time I remember being there, I was walking from one tent to the next, and it was back when Kate Hudson was married to Chris Robinson, lead singer of the Black Crowes, and it was a rainy day, and she was sitting at a picnic table with like a cool bandana tied around her, talking to another woman. It was a rainy day. I remember I was walking with another comedian, and Vic Henley, God rest him, man, good dude, and we're walking. And I look over and I go, bro, look at her. I go, there is no way she's living this lifestyle long term. You know, because the Crowes are a real road band. And it was muddy and it was rainy, you know. And then, you know, I said the same. A couple of years later, they got divorced. But, like, it's like a lifestyle that is not for everybody, man. And but the people that do live it, like you, it's like being in these like Bonnaroo and in the tent with the other musicians, and it's muddy out and people. That's like a living room. That's like your living room.
Yeah. Right?
That's where you feel most comfortable.
Yeah,
isn't
like
it?
I have more anxiety just being on my couch watching Netflix. Like, I don't know what to do with myself.
I wish I was online right now doing that. Right? Not really, but you know what I'm saying. What? He gets anxiety thinking about watching TV on his couch. And then that's the goal.
Yeah, I mean that's what I'm saying. It's just a completely different lifestyle. Again, rock and roll, there's none of that going on over here, just because probably we're in different points of our lives. Yeah. We're 50, yeah. Kids, family. Not that I was ever doing that to begin with, but you got these seven guys on the road, and has this been the original guys you started with when you were like 19, 20?
Yeah, like when I first started touring, I bought a van. I had like $13,000 left from my bar mitzvah money, and I bought a van, and I was really into Chuck Berry at the time, and I heard this story that Chuck used to just like hire local bands in every city. So I Craigslisted 100 bands for my first tour, and I would just like drive this van by myself and drive to each town and play with all these local musicians, because I thought to myself, like, okay, I don't have a fan base in Kansas, but maybe if I hire a local band, maybe they'll bring their five friends, and I'll just, like, I love Frank Sinatra and I love all the conductors of the world, just like, and that's like what that's like my bread and butter, is conducting bands and getting that going. So I would just like go from town to town, and if I really loved a musician, I was like, I'm leaving tomorrow. Do you want to quit everything and hop in the van? And I met every band member, just left their families and left their whole gig to come to us to the next town. And then, you know, 15 years later, they're still with me. So.
Wow. Phenomenal. Well, I gotta commend you on just the entrepreneurship here of, hey, I probably can't afford to bring an entire band with me on the road. I'm going to reach out to local bands. And when you do that, how the hell are you just bringing sheet music for them to just look at while you're playing the song? I mean, how does it even work? There's no rehearsal. There's
no rehearsal. It was mostly because I was my first year being a piano player. So I really didn't know any chords. So I was like, all right, guys, I had three different grooves. I had a disco groove, I had a blues groove, and I had kind of like a funky groove. Because I didn't grow up listening to like the Grateful Dead in LA. It was like, oh, we're chasing the rabbit's tail being pop acts. So like I went out there and I saw people were like listening to like 20 minute songs. I'm like, oh, so you could actually like spread these songs out. You don't need 100 songs anymore. You could just fucking let it ride for 25 minutes. I was like, all right, that's cool. So I was like, I had four songs and I'd basically say, all right, each song's in the same key, because all I knew was one key, C. I still only know two or three keys, but I was just like, all right, cool. So like we just like play a 40 minute song.
Wow.
The same three. It was so, now I look back at it, I'm like, damn, that must have been so obnoxious for the bartender, you know? It's like set two, we're playing again, and just made up different lyrics and stuff.
So are you, to this day, like my daughter plays piano, right? Practices every day, he's got the teacher and this and that. That's not anything you did, right? You just self-taught. Now, do you still practice, or do you only jam? Or do you still, like, when you have downtime, like, try and get better?
It's more of, like, trying to write songs. Like, I really love writing songs. I really love writing lyrics. I really love doing that. I'll fly out to Nashville, do some co-writes with a bunch of songwriters out there, that's why I'm out in L.A. to write with some writers in L.A., like Kyle Gass and Kenny Carkeet and stuff.
Isn't it hard, though, when you go to write a song? How do you not sing someone else's song accidentally? You know?
There's not enough melodies in the world now. Right. You know what is wild, though, I just found out? There's this, like, AI program that, like, this guy did the AI thing, which is fucking weird. And he did this thing where it's, like, find every melody that isn't been copyrighted yet. So the AI machine found every single melody that wasn't copyrighted and put it on he put it on that like where you could like use like free branding or whatever so you don't get sued for a melody, because that was the worry. Like you'd write a song you thought was a hit, but it's actually a fucking Beatles song or something. Like, and then you get sued as the kid, because all those record labels are just basically fucking you. So like this fucking awesome nerd, shout out to this nerd, I forgot his name, but thank you. Now we're not getting sued for that anymore.
Nice.
Just in case, you know, because they're all looking for that. So yeah, I think that's the hardest part, is like you feel like you wrote a great song, but it's Let It Be.
What's
it like with jokes? Yeah. Same thing?
I don't know. Like sometimes you feel like this sounds familiar. You know, like did I hear this somewhere? And you know, I'm making it, or have I said this so many times where I think it's already in the world?
Yeah,
you know,
because
I said it so many times. But I didn't know there was copyright on melodies.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that. Did you?
Yeah, I did, and it's really aggravating too, because it's like, I don't even know how you write a song. Because every time you try to, even messing around when I try to write one, I'm like, oh, wait, I know. I'm doing blah, blah, blah song or something like that.
Yeah.
You can't help going there.
You play?
No. No, I just mess around. My daughter's like, we try to do songs and stuff like that, you know?
Oh, we should jam, bro.
Yeah.
Jam
this guy. That'd be an honor to me. Dude, your best work is even ahead of you, and you're already doing great work. I'm telling you, man. You're gonna
appreciate
be fucking
it.
Big
Thanks,
time.
Pete.
Yeah.
You're the man, bro.
You already are big time, but I'm like... So, I mean, like, you roll with, like, you've had conversations with, like, let's say, Eddie Vedder.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's not by accident. Because we all end up in the middle. You're not in the middle.
Well, I appreciate it. But, like, what I'm trying to deal with is, like, being burnt out and stuff. Like, how do you keep the dream alive? Like, after you've seen a dream, how do you, like, kind of still fine-tune the dream to, like, even grow even more as an artist,
right?
Like, you know, like,
especially him. What? There's nothing.
Yeah,
left
you've
to
done
do.
Everything, Sebastian. Like, how do you fucking feel so inspired?
No, for me, it's finding other outlets in entertainment where, you know, you could be a success. For example, this. We've been doing this for 10 years. It's been something that it's been a labor of love. We enjoy talking to one another. We haven't really made any money on this. But now we're like, all right, let's take this a little bit more serious. Let's see if we could up our game. Let's do some live shows. Let's do some whatever. We're on Patreon. We're having guests. Yeah. We're challenging ourselves in that way. But I had a question, and I want to go back to the song thing. Is it albums now? Because growing up, it was like, got to get the album.
Right.
It's 13 songs. Right. Or do you get you write one song and go, we got to get this out as a single, and then the single just generates interest rather than waiting to have, whatever, 10 to 13 songs? Is it album generated for you, or are you just looking for hits, like singles?
Yeah, the industry is singles, but like, I feel like that's the reason why I got into music is like writing a piece. Like you're writing a 13 song album for how you're feeling at, you know, right now, 35 years old or 28, you know, it's like just period pieces. Like this is like what happened in the 70s, like disco era. Everyone was just doing like two or three song singles. They weren't making records. And I think it kind of fucked up the music industry in a sense, because right now you're feeling that where this ADD culture just wants you to build content, have content. Like if you just give them 13 songs right away, they're going to forget about it in a week. So they just want you to spread it out because everyone has like 6 second memories now. It's kind of sad.
Sad, man.
Right?
And I mean,
especially as a piece of music or a special, like, how like much pressure is it to like you make a special and then you have to feel like you have to make another fucking special the next goddamn month?
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of growing up, the comedians only did, you know, 3 specials. But now, since everything is so exposed, like you got a bit online, probably everybody has seen the bit. So when you go to a town with that bit, they're like, it's not like music where you can play the same song over and over. People just, oh, I love this. Typically with comedy, it's like, what's he doing this for? We heard this last time we were here. Like, where's the new stuff? So there is a lot of pressure to perform and deliver content. But I liked it where you bought an album and there was like a story throughout
loved
the
it.
Album.
Loved it.
Right? And now I just see like, I see a song, I go, oh, he's got an album out, she's got an album out. Yeah. And I go look for the album. It's not there. It's just like one song.
Yeah.
And there's like 3 or 4 people on the song. That's another thing I've noticed with the...
everything's a collaboration.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Is that something that you feel pressure? Like, oh, yeah. I gotta get another guy who has another fan base. So if he's on this song with me, we're going to bring the 2 fan bases together to make that song more popular? Or are you like, screw it, I'm just doing my own thing?
Yeah, no, that's the biggest pressure. It's all about collaboration right now. And like sometimes like... I'm not trying to bring like Nelly into my piano blues song, you know? Like it's like they keep on pushing, like, yeah, let's get some rappers, let's get a country act, let's diverse the thing. I'm like, I just think it's like devaluing the art if you're just always thinking about collaboration, because then it's just basically you're not writing songs that are timeless, you're writing songs for what's happening at the exact moment.
Mm.
I don't think those songs last as much as the songs where, like, I think about the Beatles a lot now, or think about Stones. Like, those songs have lasted now, 60 years?
Yeah, I know.
It's like, what the fuck? That's like the goal, right? The dream.
Yeah.
Is that like that with jokes too? Like, do you want that joke to last for that long? Or do they feel like it's like, I don't know, like my buddy Todd Glass. You know Todd Glass? Mm-hmm. That's like one of my best friends. And I'm really like learning from him, like how hard it is to be a comedian where like, I could play the same song, you know, like you were saying, like, oh, I get one hit, I'm good. You guys have to keep on fucking chipping away, like,
not only that, away, with the song, sucks. The thing they have it easy with music sometimes is you can have a verse where you don't even have the verse, like the third verse, you could just go boop ba ba da ba ba boop da ba da, right? And they don't even care. Like, you imagine doing a joke and you get to the punch and you're like, shoo ba da ba 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 ba. And I'm gonna come to town for 20 years and do that same thing. And you're gonna be mad if I don't. Holy shit. You know, you get your 10 songs. Who wouldn't do shrooms before the show? You know, go up there, sing them and leave, you know? That's because it is. But here's the problem, man. Like, because like I grew up seeing things you, I'd look at the album and like, you know, it would sit there and listen and look at the words. Now my daughter collects some albums, like especially Taylor Swift. But once she knows the songs, the name of them, I hear her in there, Alexa, play blah, 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 play blah, blah. And like, you know, it's instant. In 2 seconds, the song you want to hear is blaring out of your speaker. And the convenience factor, just like the idea of pulling out a record, putting it on, oh God, what am I going to mow my lawn here? What the fuck? Who's got that kind of time?
Well, it was ritualistic in the sense where you would put the record on, you would go, and there used to be, well, at least with the DVDs, and even sometimes with the record, we used to pull it out, and there used to be like,
awesome.
Like a booklet of the words, and you maybe would sit there and like,
right.
digest it yes. more rather than Alexa play this, and then you're washing the dishes exactly. while the song's on.
Exactly, man. You're right.
So yeah, I don't know. It's just different.
We lost
different
times. The human experience of music a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah, I think. I mean, you could speak to this more than us. I mean, I don't know. I think you would want people to enjoy the music and be present and maybe learn a little bit more background of the artist. And maybe people still do this, but yeah. I mean, even when you're touring too, do you find that? You guys generally get on, is there any major production involved or do you like to keep it kind of bare bones and all about the music? Cause you go see someone like Taylor Swift, the Beyonce or Ed Sheeran or whatever it is. There's like, you know, it's yeah. just a lot of like bells and whistles involved in the, so do you feel like, is that something that, hey, obviously adds to the performance, yeah. but for a guy like you, is it something like, oh, we got to have lights and this and that and the other thing.
Have you ever seen like Springsteen live?
No.
Bare bones. That's what I loved. That gave me hope that I don't have to have like 25 fucking dancers yeah. and like just big old screens. Like Bruce walked up and it was so inspiring because that man's got to be like 75. Still didn't stop, did a 3.5 hour set. Just straight music, straight entertaining, low lights, not lasers yeah. and like extravagance. And yeah, and I feel like I want to bring that old rock and roll back. You know, mm-hmm. I want that. Just give us a spotlight. Let the band go crazy and let's write good songs that matter. Like, I don't want people to wreck. Like, this was a problem in the beginning years of my career was like, I'd like do like the horror on stage where I get 10,000 people just to do the horror or I'd crowd surf or I'd just like crowd surf to a bag of mushrooms and eat them. Like, that was like, people weren't. They're more about the show than the actual songs. So when I think about that with like Taylor Swift, who does write great songs, or like Beyonce, like what do we remember? The song, or do we remember her like being elevated 100 feet up in the air with like,
yeah,
you know, it's
yeah.
like, I don't know. It's like sometimes like it goes back to this like ADD culture. Like no one has time to just like sit on your floor, open up the vinyl, read the liner notes, read the lyrics while you're listening to the record.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
we're so, that's what's fucked up about society right now. We're just so, we forget about just the beauty of just sitting still and just like painting.
Yeah.
like, you know, do you ever paint it?
My wife's an artist, so she, no, I haven't painted. I tried. And it's not for me.
No. It's, what do you do to like calm your brain?
You know, that's a good question. my brain tends to be always thinking about something, right? Yeah. There's really no calm. I've tried meditating, tried, you know, because I got a problem of thinking 7, 8, 9 steps ahead and not being in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to be a little bit more in the moment, trying to enjoy life a little bit more. Kids and whatnot, no, not always pining about X, Y, and Z. Yeah. And I don't really have like a, I mean, yeah, I work out here and there. I mean, obviously the last podcast we saw, we threw up a photo of.
Right, yeah.
The working out ain't helping.
Yeah.
You asked what he does, his hobby's eating.
I do like to cook. It does calm me down, but with cooking comes wine, it comes overindulgent, and I'm just from a culture that what we do to bond is we eat. My father's going to come here in a month. For 7 days, we're going to be outside having wine and cheese and meat and talk about sodium.
Yeah,
and your feet expand
out.
Yeah,
homie's about to. You won't even fit in those feet. But
no, I've noticed that I eat now, and I need to unbutton things, which is you don't have this problem because I don't know what kind of metabolism you have.
Yeah,
but you don't gain weight at all.
I do. I don't, yeah, but, you know, I don't imbibe in the wine as much, man. I'm more of a...
Well, even the beard.
Weed and coffee.
Boom.
Yeah. But I'm more of an in-the-moment guy, too. Like,
Like I could, I could stay in my garage for fucking years, you know, just hanging out in there.
Yeah,
I don't even have a car. I don't work on cars or nothing. I just, you know, smoke pot in there and write some notes and just, you know, straighten shit up. I love a neat garage. You ever just look at your garage and be like, it is so tight right now? This is how pathetic. Last week, I knew I had to get back on the road. I was vacuuming my garage.
Wow.
Just the cement, getting it with the vacuum. I'm like, why do I always brush? I'm not getting it with good with the, you know, so.
No, you know what you're doing? And I've noticed this. I think what you're doing is you're avoiding.
Life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what can I do to, like, not do anything?
Totally. You
know, like, I'm going to go and vacuum my. Yeah, there's, right? Like, there's things you're avoiding.
Yes.
That's why you're in the garage.
I know.
Making it tight.
You're right, bro.
But you don't want to do anything.
What?
It's like, if you're scared to, like, not do nothing. Right? Well, so you have to like at least do something where
I want to be given every month. I want a lot of money mailed to me and I want everybody to know me and tell me I'm great when I go out and about. But other than that, I don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
I don't want to do anything for any of that. You know what I just want to be like Prince William, right? That's it. I want to be a fucking prince. All you have to do is be born. They love you and you're rich. Yeah.
Do you ever just like keep your garage door open so your neighbors see how clean?
All the time. But it's so far from the road that, you know, you can't really see. And if you stop, I'm like, now I see. And then what I do sometimes, I open up the side. Like, here's my garage. Then I open up the side door so I can stand right over here. And pee, and you can only see me from the waist up on the road. So they don't even know, bro, he's talking about, you know.
Bro, you know, this is like
he was using the C word over there.
Yeah, but I'm wrapping my head around it. You got like half a bot. You're pissing, and only people don't know you're pissing, but you
from
can
the
look
waist
at
down. Yeah, so I don't have to go because I don't want to walk all the way back behind the garage. It's too far of a walk.
You're pissing in a toilet?
No, I'm pissing in the stones right next to a bush. And here's the funny thing: I have three bushes in a row, and the one I'm like, this goddamn bush. Hey, the other two are doing good, and then I dawned on me. I'm like, maybe it's because I'm pissing 2 feet away from it all summer long. It's getting bad soil.
It's just like a splotch, like a dead splotch in the grass.
I can't believe you're pissing outside, man. What the fuck is this?
Why?
At your home?
Yeah. You go all the... If you're in your backyard, right? Let's say you're in your backyard by your pool, right? And you're doing something and you got to take a leak. You're going all the way back in the house. You're not just going over by the hedges as the kids are
at school. I'm not saying I haven't pissed outside. However, I'm not pissing outside where a neighbor goes, hey, Pete, and you're like, what's going on?
I haven't had a conversation yet, but...
Oh, my God.
So, all right.
Before you leave, I want to talk about a venue that you mentioned off air that you play, Red Rocks,
in
Colorado. Yeah. Now, was that a dream of yours to play that? Because that seems to be a very historic venue.
Yeah.
People love playing it. Was that something on your bucket list? And when you did play it, did it match your expectations?
Oh, yeah. Because, like, you know, sometimes when you play that big of a room, you don't know if, like, sometimes some music doesn't translate to that type of room, you know, like I can't, but like seeing my mom up there and seeing my, you know, my whole family and just like how it's formed is it's like a mountain. It's not like vertical, like kind of like House of or Hollywood Bowl. It's like a mountain. So like you could see all the way atop that last
you played
person.
Too. Yeah.
Was it like that too for you? Like, whoa, like did it feel more intimate for a 10,000 cap? Versus some of the other 10,000 caps you played?
Well, I think it's better for music. I necessarily don't think it's set up for comedy. Generally speaking, comedy outdoors doesn't really work.
Yeah.
And that was my kind of other question. Do you like playing outdoors opposed to an indoor room?
Yeah. I feel like it depends what type of show. Like festival shows outdoors, it's awesome. I've seen 20,000 people out there, yada, yada. But like... For me to like really like when I could talk and everyone just quiets down, no one's just like tripping or like drunk, you know, like I could really have control of the crowd. I do love like theater shows. That's like my favorite. Like, cause I feel like you hear, I don't know, like, this is why I fucking love comedians is like you suck the air out of a crowd and they're there for you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like they're just there to throw a party or whatnot. And like, that's like my goal is like, I want people to listen to my lyrics. I don't want them just to hear the guitar solo. I don't, you know, so a theater is way better, but Red Rocks, everyone already knows how special this venue is. And so everyone like, they just treat it a little differently. So it's cool. It feels like a theater show.
That's cool. So when you're doing a show, are you looking into the crowd and connecting with people? Like, do you wink at somebody or do you point, or, you know, is it a general point where you're just like, yeah? And do you notice people, maybe there's 3,000 people there and there's one person that you just, they're not into it. Do you hone in on that person?
I hone in on him and it ruins my fucking show. Everyone else having a great time, this one guy just like this, like not enjoying any joke, or just like he said that before, like just like shit like that. Yeah. And that ruins my show. So I normally close my eyes now.
Oh, you do?
Oh,
yeah. Well, I'll tell you though, man.
I thought you were closing your eyes because you were so into the music. But he's telling me he's closing. He don't want to see nobody.
Yeah, I was like kind of nervous, like, because like, you know, it's like some of these songs are pretty intimate, or like some of these songs, especially when my mom's at the shows and I'm like playing a song called like Blame It on the Pussy or something.
That could be like a problem.
It's but, just like, I don't want my mom. I've like watched my mom like walk out of my show when earlier in my career. And it was like, I was like kind of just being, you know, rash like I was in the beginning of the podcast. But like, I just don't have a filter. So like, yeah. And my mom, like going back to like, maybe my mom didn't raise me, because I've been like this my whole fucking life. And she's like, oh, this is how my son is? You know, like,
yeah, well, maybe it was a lot for her to take in. All about the pussy. Well, listen, Matt, we know you're going on tour, this Thursday?
Yeah.
100 City Tour, starting in Cleveland, ending where?
Do we know? Ending... where is it? Last show is December 17th.
It never really ends.
There'll be more tacked on halfway through.
I think December 17th is.
This year it's gonna be at the end of the year.
Well, I got 2 weeks off, and then we start our West Coast tour in January. So okay. It's like it's still February.
Okay. We know you're busy. We appreciate you taking the time.
Big time, man.
This is legendary, bro. Sebastian. Pete, you guys are goats.
Hey.
Like, really? Like, for real. Like, you guys are goats to me, and my parents love you. My mom cried when she found out I was coming over to your house.
Oh, wow, that's sweet.
It was like, that's really, nice. Like, you are a big part of my family, and I just, like, for me to, like, just have a talk with you about mushrooms and cum, it's an honor.
Oh, man.
There you have it.
The show has ended.
No, just keep the mushroom. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. I have a family.